Too many transport problems. Alright. Alright. Colleagues, good morning. Hope you can stand me there. Alright. Colleagues, I received an apology from the minister. There's a special cabinet this morning. Initially, she was going to be here and then indicated that the deputy minister would attend, and so all the well. So I thought that was fine. And we welcome the chair of the Road Accident Fund, and the board members and the executive, Advocate MTB, and your team from the SIU, AG, the department, colleagues. So what we'll do is, what we'll do is give the DM an opportunity to make opening remarks if there are any, and then go to clarifying issues which are historic in nature. And then I think before we go to REF, get an update by the SIU first, so that we clear the woods, and then at that point we'll hand over to the chair of REF, and then Honorable Van Meenen and Honorable Bukes will be in your hands at that point, because we have issues with REF, right? We met here. There were certain issues that we discussed. Certain things needed to be done. There was court actions. There have been judgments. And the committee position remains unchanged that the accounting standard should revert. So on. So there's all those things. So we wanna. Luckily, there's no sitting this afternoon. So adopt a Hambagahle and figure corner approach. So okay, let's start then with the DM, and then Advocate and TB will come to you. So just stand by, and then Honorable Van Meenen and Honorable Bukes, we will be in your hands. So colleagues, the minister did send in an apology, and the DM is here. DM also, of course, I think it's helpful that in your previous life, you had sight of these things when you in the Portfolio Committee on Transport. So congratulations on your appointment to the executive in the capacity of Deputy Minister. Yeah. All right, DM, over to you. Sister, this is long apologies and all that other administrative stuff, so we manage time. DM, over to you.
Thank you very much, Chair, and good morning, colleagues. Chair, you'll confirm if that rule in the House of Maiden Speeches that people are protected applies in Scopa. Number one.
Well, there you have it. Are you a maiden?
But it's okay. Thank you very much, colleagues. It's very strange to sit on the other side, but I think it's part of the game. But Chair, thank you very much for the opportunity. Thank you for acknowledging that minister's apology. She was actually here. We were in the Portfolio Committee yesterday. She had to leave. Chair, as you said, the last time SCOPA took certain positions in terms of the RAF matter, the minister then, Minister Mbalula, wrote to RAF through the chairperson of the board, directing them actually to withdraw the case and find another means of resolving any issues that are there. I want to say the ministry, all of us, the minister and myself and the department, we stand by that decision.
we are very clear in that regardless of whatever differences might be there, there is a legal obligation for the Road Accident Fund and all other entities to report to Parliament. There is also a legal obligation on the AGSA to submit during certain times. And there we are very clear that we must be held to account to Parliament, and therefore we expect that RAF will cooperate in submitting whatever is due to Parliament. As I said, the letter was written, the position in the same way as that of SCOPA of the Ministry has not changed, in that the RAF must submit to Parliament all what is due, or allow the AG or cooperate with the AG, whichever comes first. As we said, the Minister had directed them to take a particular resolution. So RAF has been instructed to submit or cooperate such that all the necessary statements, annual reports, audited, is submitted to Parliament for scrutiny. So we are very clear about that, and we are not at all wavering on that one. We have had an opportunity to meet with RAF, the Minister. After this invitation was specific as to things required, when we received the submission by RAF, the Minister wrote to RAF, and we were not satisfied of the issues being addressed that SCOPA is requiring. So we expect today that RAF will present as requested by SCOPA, and that secondly, our position is that the AG must submit, RAF must submit everything that is due to Parliament in line of what has been said. Should there be any other issue, that should be dealt with as a separate matter altogether. So we do not expect any re-agitation of the things that were already ventilated in this particular meeting. Should there be anything, as the Ministry, we will be engaging with RAF, to make sure that we smooth all these things, which are undesirable indeed. So, Chair, with no further delay, I'm sure the agenda is quite full. That is the position of what we did after the last meeting here, and what our position is today, and be assured of our 110% cooperation in the direction that we get here going forward. It is not in our interest not to be held accountable, either the department and the ministry and those that report to us. Thank you very much, Chair.
All right. Thank you very much, TM. I think we will proceed in that fashion. I think the omission, though, I think let's get a introduction of who from REF is here. And then how far are you with withdrawing the case? Because there's that matter. I think let's just get clarity on that. Where are you with, and when are you submitting all that which is due to Parliament? Are you just standby?
Good morning, Chairperson. My name is Kathy Pini. I am the chair of the board. Could I just thank you for the invitation before I respond?
Sure, that's fine. I think please use the one to your, it doesn't work right.
We have with us the chair of audit of the audit committee on my right hand side, Mr. Hilmi Daniels, and on my left hand side we have the CEO, Mr. Lizwalo, and next to him is the CFO, Ms. Potgieter, and next to her
is the Chief Governance Officer, Ms. Khumalo, and next to her is Chief Strategy Officer, Mr. Lothoreni. With regards to the case action, the board on the 27th of October took the decision to withdraw the case on condition that we consider and pursue alternative dispute resolution mechanism. We started engaging with the AG's office, and we basically had a back and forth, but at this point in time I can indicate that the RAF board is meeting with the AG herself on the 16th of May, and we hope that we can then finalize the withdrawal of that particular court action. So in terms of withdrawal, that's what the board did in terms of took the action. The issue why we could not go ahead was the fact that, of course, that because so would have to agree with the AG also in terms of how we deal with those costs.
Agree with the AG and how we deal with the costs. My recollection tells me, well, we won't work into that, and that the cost would ultimately sit at your doorstep. Now, this is 27 October. Today is the 20th of April. I don't get a sense of urgency on this thing. How far are you with the 2021-22
audit? The 2021-22 audit, Chair, because we had not, on our part, finalized in terms of submission to the AG. We requested when we met with the AG on the 10th of November and then put it in writing on the 15th that could they please reopen the audit so that we could submit. We've also had a back and forth on that particular issue. We haven't finalized it. We're also hoping that on the 16th we'll finalize it. However, because the minister has instructed us to then submit that particular audit, we're now finalizing the submission, hoping that if the AG does agree that we submit other documents, we'll be able to also do that. But at present, we're preparing that audit for submission. The minister has given us a deadline on that one. Thank you.
And so far as the accounting standard, what is the position at this point?
At the present, we still have the same accounting standard. Those are the issues, Chair, that we're hoping to discuss with the AG herself. And as I'm indicating, we've only got the date for meeting and discussing these issues with the AG. We actually got the date last week Friday because we've been trying to get a meeting between the board itself and the AG herself. And that date has only come this past Friday from the AG's office.
So the same accounting standard that the SAB, National Treasury and RCA have told you that is not acceptable, for lack of a better phrase. It's still in place. I ask because your presentation is digging in, which, as we said then, if you read it, colleagues, it's... Anyway, DG, I should have acknowledged the DG as well of transport to here, Babu Mlam. So that is that the position that you are holding on to that standard? I just wanted for clarity on the record so we know what you're dealing with. So because I'm just trying to clear the words of all these outstanding matters and then we will go to SIA.
Thanks, Chairperson. We are hoping, Chairperson, to have an engagement with the AG on these matters. with regard to the standard, we believe that we followed the process in terms of that particular standard, and we're hoping that the engagement with the AG will finally finalize these matters, and then we can then move forward.
National Treasury is wrong. The ASB is wrong. We are wrong, and you are right. It's a classical case of the minister is wrong. It's a classical case of, see, both these colleagues, I'm the youngest, so I've got latest movies as opposed to what they would have watched. It's a classical case of Matilda, Miss Trunchbull. I'm right, you wrong. I'm big, you small, and there's nothing you can do about it. That's what it is. So that's who we are. So in essence, from when we last met in 2022, there's no change. Is that what you are saying? I see the CEO at your discretion, Madam Chair.
Okay, let me just give it to the CEO and then I'll
come. Thank you very much, Chair. I want to clarify that there's a lot that happened since we last met. And I'm going to explain it from the sequence of events. When we last met, the committee indicated its discomfort with the fact that we were using IPSAS 42 principles to develop our accounting policy, which is contrary to what we used to do, which is using the principles of IFRS 4 to arrive at an accounting policy. Now, Chair, what then subsequently happened is that there was a meeting held between ourselves and the minister. The minister then instructed that we must consider withdrawing the litigation and consider other less confrontational methods to resolve the dispute. I must add for the record, Chair, that the dispute does exist, and it is the AG and ourselves that agree that there is a dispute on this matter. Then what subsequently happened is that the board passed a resolution. The resolution says we are going to withdraw the litigation on condition that what the minister instructed we must pursue is pursued, which is alternative dispute resolution. And then, of course, what then happened is that there was a meeting between the board and functionaries in the AG because the AG could not meet. Then it was then agreed that there were three issues that were raised in that meeting that needed resolution. Then the board was asked to write a letter. The letter was written. The position was put forward, Chair, which was the issue around the withdrawal of litigation and the conditions thereof, pursuing alternative dispute resolution where the board proposed a certain mediator, and the third one was reopening of the 21-22 on the basis of the 10, I think it's the conditions under which you reopen, which was then put forward, because the AG said we can reopen only if there, I think it's two instances. That, Chair, was done. Then the AG came back, and there was correspondence to and fro, and at the point, the AG simply refused to go to the alternative dispute resolution. And what then happened after that was that we then wrote back to explain further. Then when she came back, she said she is going to set the matter down because we don't want to withdraw it, as she put it. She has now set it down, Chair. and in setting it down, it went in front of the DJP in North Gauteng, who gave directives that RAF must submit its reply, and that reply has since been submitted. And it was only on Friday last week, through the correspondence that we received, that the AG has agreed to pursue this ADR process with a meeting that is going to be held on the 16th of May. I must emphasize, Chair, that the annual financials for 2020-2021 were subsequently to the SCOPA meeting also submitted, and that there was a meeting with the minister in which there was alignment about us submitting the 2021-22, which we continue to finalize. So those two submissions that are supposed to come to Parliament are on their way, and they would be here as per the request of the minister. So the issue about pursuing ADR, we did. The issue around 2020-2021 annual financials, we did. The one of 21-22 we are still finalizing, Chair. So that is the process. Thanks, Chair.
Yeah, but it doesn't answer the question. As we sit it here now, and you are saying that you are undergoing an audit, what accounting standard is on the table? That's the issue that we are asking. Because we have sight of all this toing and froing that you are doing. But what we want categorically is, where are we with the accounting standard? Because that is the basis upon which we've got an impasse. And to say we've got a discomfort with the accounting standard you are using would be an understatement. So I think that's what we want. Where are you with that? Ruben Odetwanje at this point.
Chair, the accounting standards that we are applying is the GRAP framework, as it's known. It's GRAP 3, as it's known. It's GRAP 19, as it's known. Particularly paragraph 11 of GRAP 3, Chair, which has what is called a hierarchy. So the reality is this, Chair. There is no standard for GRAP. For social benefits.
Right.
In the
fine. You want us to go back to where we were?
No, Chair,
we are not reopening that debate. The horses have bolted on that one a long time ago. To take us back to that debate of September 2022, can assure you now, is certainly not the object of this meeting. So that debate, I'm not even opening it up. We're not going to have it, respectfully. Honorable Liz.
Mr. Chairman, you've said much of what I want to say, so thank you for that. However, I need clarity on the annual report for the 2021 year, which has now on its way to be submitted to Parliament. I don't think there's provision in law to submit anything but an audited and final report. So I want clarity on what is being submitted for that particular year to Parliament, because I hear the CEO and the Chair talking about reopening, and well, you can't. Once it's submitted to Parliament, my understanding is that's it, unless you go through the court process or some other process, but maybe I'm wrong. So I need clarity on what exactly is being going to be submitted, and when will it be submitted?
Honourable Mentor.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Okay, I want to also get a clarity on what the Chair of the Board is saying, that them and the AG agree that there is a dispute. And as far as we know from the previous meeting, the AG does not have a dispute. They are imposing a law which is not governed in this country. And on what basis then there is a dispute? Because AG has clarified that we are unable to audit this special case with the methods and the tools that don't exist in this country. And you are imposing the new tool and the new method, which they do not have, which they don't prescribe on. So what do you mean you both have a dispute? You both agree you have a dispute. Because they don't dispute, you are disputing, you are imposing something that is not governed by the standards of the audit in this country. Thank you, Chair.
That's why I was saying we're not going back to that debate. It's very clear. AG, ASB, National Treasury, Ministry, ourselves, we are quite clear on that one. Honorable Somia, Babu Mtibi, just bear with us momentarily.
Good morning, Chair, honorable members, the Deputy Minister. Good morning, the DG and his team, the Chair of the Board, and the CEO. The difficulty I have, well, Chair, I think you have expressed it quite correctly. But it's not our desire to be brought back into the debate that we finalized. You see, and more so when these matters were dealt with, and in that finality, we receive with strength the assertion by the minister of the department on a particular route which ought to be followed one way or the other. But once an institution takes a different route in terms of the issues, I could with belief that the question on the minister's side would be the effect that the board has a right to take a decision, but a decision that they take, it should be a sound, legal decision, one way or the other. If they fail to do so, they would have been, after this long debate, so long that matters of advice have pulled through in this manner, and the Office of the Auditor General of South Africa does not prescribe any standard. That office audits based on the prescription which has been issued in a particular form by defined institutions, something which has happened. Now that RAF comes back and say they still stand firm on what previously has been clarified in this committee agreed upon, it really brings difficulty to understand to where we are going to, not unless that the board is so fixed and flying closer to delinquency, and if they're flying closer to delinquency, it means, therefore, anything which is going to be as a result of their stance, they ought to somewhat be prepared to handle, including the costs thereof, because the process itself has costs. What I know was in my other work in Parliament, I'm the chair of the Auditor General Committee, through the interactions that one has with the Office of the Auditor General, there were senior officers in the office which were assigned in terms of this kind of work, and those officers, senior officers, a part of executive, they have finalized and signed off the audit for us. What they are busy with, left with, is the audit for the current year, financial year. And in finalizing, they have observed the prescripts of the law as defined, and it was somewhat outlined to us in the previous meeting. So there's, in terms of the AG, there's no issue, you see. And the AG acknowledges that has got a standing meeting, which is in May with RAF. And in terms of that meeting, what is left is to say the previous audit is finalized and we're looking into the future. How are we going to deal with that future? Knowing very well that there have been undertakings which are made in a meeting of this sort. I think we have AG in the house. They could confirm where they are. And I really don't know why are we still somewhat in this situation. So for me is that we should place it, now we have reached the stage to place it to them, that is the board. If they continue in this route as a committee, that anything which is an insistence on their part to use and to undertake an illegal route, they must know that they're getting into closer to the declaration which the committee would have to receive an advice on their own delinquency and any costs that relate to those. Those costs should not go to RAF, they should go to the individuals concerned, including the cost of the Auditor General, who is wasting time rather than looking into their audit, accommodating them in the same manner. You see, I think that undertaking must be taken by this meeting so that it should move and go forward. That's what I want to propose, unfortunately.
Let's get responses to that, because there's just so much going on at REF. There's the Lekgodi judgment, which has got cost implications for the board and the CEO. So there's just too much going on. And it doesn't project at the very least an image, right? And this is a very low standard I'm about to place. It doesn't project an image of functionality, you know. Not that functionality, you know, must be gauged on image, but as a baseline, as the lowest I can go. And even on that one, you're failing. Right, let's get a response and reaction to those things, because the AG signed off on audit management letters on the 30th of September 2022 already on some of your issues. So let's get a reaction and a response to the issues that have been raised, if there is any.
Chair, I think the board will answer for itself on that matter. Safe to say, as the issue around the 30th of September is concerned, yes, that's why we wanted them to reopen, but given the fact that they've already tabled, as we say, the minister has instructed that we must bring the 2021-22, we're working on it. On censures, from a management perspective, we are prepared to be censured. Because, you see, Chair, the part where we would come, and if we are wrong, we arrive at scope and we say things, whatever we have told you, and this is found to be wrong, we must expect censure, sir. There's no way in which we can come to this parliament and mislead parliament about our accounting policy position and expect nothing in return if we are found to be wrong. We are prepared for change. And I think there's a pendulum that must swing both ways, Chair, in a sense that if it is then discovered that others are wrong, they must also be censured. We are prepared for censure as management. I will ask the Chair to speak on behalf of the Board.
Thank you, CEO. In line also with the Board, we are prepared for censure around this matter as well. But as the CEO has indicated, we are working on the 2021-2022 submission. As indicated, the Minister has given us a date for submission, and that's what we are currently focused on. Thank you. She has given the 28th of April.
Yeah, from our side, Chair, we are using our all endeavors to make sure that we arrive at that, given the fact that there are people that are involved. This thing still needs to go to the AG as well. They look at it and all those things, but we are working on our best endeavors to deliver to what the Minister has requested us to do. Thanks. Chair, the Lahori judgment is a matter that to me is sub judice because it deals with my personal rights, and I wish to say I have no further nothing to say save for what I've submitted to the SCA. Thanks. It's under appeal, Chair. This is a personal matter, Chair. You see, and I'll tell you why I'm saying that, Chair. I can be given the chance to say what I want to say because I want it for the record. The Lahori judgment passes a judgment that says I pay in my personal capacity as Collins Litswa. It's not a matter of Ralph is on his own. I'm on my own on this one. And I'm saying I've got rights. And those rights I've exercised in the SCA, I have appealed. And I would not like to talk about matters that affect me personally, because that's a personal matter. So far as...
Order, Chair. Order, Chair.
Javelin for ourselves.
usvimba pambili before we get to where we are going. That's how we should do this work. Chairperson?
Yes, Chair. We are appealing that judgment. We filed our papers. When did you file? Monday? Yes, we filed on Monday. Thank you.
Right.
Chair, I just want to make it clear for the report. The costs are Dubonis profits, meaning in my personal capacity. And I'm stating it for the record here that so far as that is concerned, those are rights. I have appealed, but I don't want to talk about the matter going forward simply because
it's in my personal capacity. That's not what you said, we're talking about the matter. I asked the status of the judgment. You're the one who is calling us to discuss it. All I'm asking is that there's a judgment on a rough matter. And it must be actioned in one way or the other. Appeal is part of the process. You know, so... Yeah, I think spare yourself the... Yeah, let me actually just stop it there. Yeah. Right, let's... Right, Mazambane, and then SIU will come in and present.
Just a quick one, Mr. Chairman. The Chair of the Board says we have appealed. Can I get clarity on who has appealed?
Okay.
The Board has appealed, the CEO has appealed, and RAF has appealed.
Chairman, that's why I'm asking for the clarity, because now is there a third appeal? So surely the board appeal is on behalf of the RAF. It's not on behalf of individual members of the board, or is it?
No, it's not on behalf of individual members.
Suffice it to say, of course, that a personal cost order was made against board members in that judgment. There was one, I know there's one on the CEO, he's appealing that, that's fine. But wasn't the judgment also on board members?
Yes, Chair, the judgment is structured this way. Firstly, when we went there for the first time, there was findings, and this was part of what they called an inquiry. The cost deponents properties were against the board, and board members individually,
yes,
and the CEO. The RAF was nowhere. So now, what happened is that when we went to leave to appeal, there was a Rule 42 amendment where RAF was then added for the costs. So that's why earlier on the appeal was the both of us, and then now that the judge through that leave to appeal added and amended this in terms of Rule 42, then RAF was included, so RAF then appealed later on. So there are three appeals.
So it goes to your question. It is three, because there was this one thing. There was on the CEO, on board members, and now you've added RAF. That's exactly how I understood it. So final question. We're not debating merits and demerits of the case. What is it that you are appealing? Verdict or the consequence of the sanction? Because the issue is around the panel of attorneys, right? In the main, right?
Yeah. Chair, we're appealing the whole judgment.
Okay.
We're appealing the whole judgment as it were. There are certain matters of law that are there, and then, of course, the orders that are there.
Okay. So the whole judgment, including the orders. All right.
Chairman, sorry if I can just be a nuisance. The one question about the status of the annual report about to be submitted on the 28th of April, is it a final audited report with a disclaimer or whatever?
The question, wasn't answered.
Definitely. It is the same, the one that is audited by the AG. So we will include in it the AG's report and everything as we do the annual report.
Now, Chair, there was an explanation earlier on from the chairperson of the board that they are talking to the AG pertaining to the cost. And there's no costs that are directed to AG or far as I understand. What cost is she talking about that they are discussing with the AG? In the ordinary course of litigation, if we had come to the end, there would have been a cost order. There would have been a discussion around it and then a cost order. Now, in our view, because we had not gotten to that stage, that is why we are discussing, we're also putting costs for discussion to say each party covers its own costs. That's our proposal. Chair, if we sit here and allow such a situation even to the AG, and fortunately the chairperson of the Auditor General's Committee is here, we'll be wrong. The AG has advised on what course should be taken pertaining to this issue. You went ahead and forced ahead with everyone saying no. Why are you now involving AG? AG should not be involved in this, and AG should not pay a cent as far as this litigation is concerned. Thank you, Chair.
All right. What we'll do is we will get a briefing from AG on the status of this matter and get their perspective. But it goes to exactly what we warned against. There is towards litigation has got undesirable consequences either way. And it causes a fundamentally unnecessary headache for all of us. Now the AG does their work, and now they have to find themselves drawn into legal costs of a situation which was not of their own doing, whereas the logical outcome is that this should not have happened to begin with. That's the dilemma. So Team AG, we will engage you just to get the material details from your side on what this has meant. All right, let's hang 10 for now with Ref. SIU, let's get your presentation on proclamation, the proclamations and matters before AG. And then maybe what we will also do is to get the costs involved on your side on these matters, so that whilst we've been briefed by AG, what are the cost implications for us? But as I'm saying again, even with the lowest standard of perception, you are found wanting as ref. SIU?
Good morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, Deputy Minister, DG, CEO of the REF, Chair of the REF Board, colleagues and all attending. We're here to update the committee on the status of our investigations at REF, as proclaimed in Proclamation R44 of 2021. Just to start off, we want to start off just briefly with the mandate that regulates us as we go about with the investigation. The mandate clearly emanates from Act Number 74 of 1996, which is the SIU Act. In the main, that legislation authorizes or mandates the special investigation to investigate serious maladministration, malpractice, corruption, and other acts that could prejudice the public interest. And we do so after receiving all of the allegations and focusing on specific focus areas of the investigation. Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, just to spend a bit around the maladministration part. The serious maladministration part is part of the investigation, and that part would look at various processes guided by Section 195 of the Constitution and the administrative law as proclaimed by the courts, and we also look at the governance of the institution. Under the governance of the institution, we look at the failure of people, and these are people at all levels. The failure of processes, the failure of systems, and the failure of governance structures. We will also consider the audit reports as we do our investigation. We kicked off this investigation as soon as it was proclaimed in 2021, and we'll give the update today. We won't really go much on the kind of skills that we have. We have the skills to do the work. That slide really just indicates the kind of skills we have. And as we investigate, we then investigate to reach the outcomes that the slides projected now really indicates. We investigate various claims and allegations at REF. And if we find that evidence points to those claims being substantiated and we return findings of irregularity, we will seek to recover any monies that REF would have lost. And we do so by instituting civil litigation, as indicated in the left side of the slide. The civil litigation we instituted at the Special Tribunal since it was proclaimed in 2019 by the President. And in the next to civil litigation is disciplinary action and referrals. On that part, we would refer any individual at REF who finds themselves guilty of misconduct, and we'll refer that to the accounting authority. We then also, if there are criminal matters that need to be dealt with, by law we're expected to send that evidence to the National Prosecuting Authority. The last part of the referrals that we will make is relating to various regulatory authorities, because we're dealing with various professions, lawyers, medical practitioners and other related professions. If we find that there's irregularities on their part, we will ensure that we take those through the professional bodies so that they are acted upon and the appropriate consequence management should result. We will also ensure that as we investigate, if there are areas that we point out that could assist REF in the improvement of the administration, will point that out and make appropriate reports. At this stage, Honourable Chair, and Honourable Chair, I might have skipped the very important part of introducing the members. I'm joined by Mr. Lekgato. On my left, who is the Chief National Investigating Officer. He is responsible and really overseeing the investigation. At the back, I'm joined by Mr. Khanyago, who is the spokesperson of SIU. Next to Mr. Khanyago, I think he stepped out, is Mr. Maseko, who is the lead investigator in this investigation. I'm going to hand over now to Mr. Lekgato, who will go now into the proclamation scope and the status of the investigations. Thank you.
Thank you, Advocate. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honourable Member. And thank you, DM, DG, and everybody present here. I will present the progress update on the investigation. As indicated, this proclamation, R44 of 2021, was issued in 2021. And the proclamation schedule provides investigation into the following matters. That is serious maladministration in the affair of REF in respect of compensation payments made by REF to claimant and claimant's agent, and payments made by REF to service provider in a manner that was contrary to applicable legislation, manual guidelines, and policies, and in a fraudulent or corrupt manner, and any other related matter related losses or irregular or fruitless and wasteful expenditure incurred by RAF or the state resulted thereof, therefore also an irregular or improper or unlawful conduct by official or employee of RAF, any other person or entity in relation to allegations set out above. Then in terms of the progress of the investigation to date, we have identified the focus area to be investigated in this matter, and we have categorized them in terms of five categories. First focus area, we are looking at duplicate claim payments made to attorneys, claimants, sheriffs, and change to mandates. And focus area number two, procurements and tender irregularities. That is, we are looking at fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Focus area number three, payments made to service providers in terms of RAF Act and or contracts. And focus area number four, invoices submitted to RAF, including bills of costs. And focus area number five, which is the last one, we are looking at fraudulent claims. Then in terms of the first focus area, the investigation focuses on loss incurred to the state, which will be the RAF, caused by duplicate payments made to several firms of attorneys as of the 1st of March 2021, which constitute unlawful act of appropriation. These duplicate payments extend to the sheriffs who execute the writs of execution and receive funds on behalf of the instructing attorneys. The RAF has a payment system which dictates that when a claim offer is accepted, whether by settlement or by a way of a court order, such claim will await 180 days before it is paid. Therefore, attorneys will then attach the RAF bank account by the way of writs of execution served by the sheriff. Then the RAF bank account will pay in terms of the writs wherein, after once the 180 days lapses, the same claim will be paid again, thus constituting the duplicate payment. Then in terms of this investigation to date, the outcome is as follows. The SIU is investigating, currently we are looking at 102 law firms, which includes the sheriffs, which received duplicate payments from RAF of approximately 340 million. When we approached some of these attorneys with evidence, several legal practitioners have opted to cooperate with the SIU investigation in defraying of the indebtedness by signing the acknowledgement of debt, meaning that some of them, when you approach them, they come and say, of course, we understand and we acknowledge that we have been paid twice for the same claim, and as a result, they entered into admission to acknowledgement of debt that they will pay back the money. So with regard to those that have acknowledged, to date, we have signed acknowledgement debts to the value of 68 million from different attorneys. Then in terms of this acknowledgement of debt, they committed they'll pay back the money, and to date we have received close to 18 million from different attorneys. Some of them, they've made arrangement to pay it over a period of time. So out of that process, we have referred evidence of criminal act to NPA, and currently we are looking at possible 10 referrals to NPA on the identified attorneys, because basically what they did, the act is amount to criminality, some of them, the way they've done it. And there are also possible 5 referrals to be made to legal practice counsel, because some of them amount to the issue of how they administered their funds in terms of the way they received the money. They were supposed not to have used the money for any other aspect, but to keep it there because it was not for use. So we will be referring some of these matters to legal practice counsel, meaning that even if they pay, it doesn't absolve them from any criminality or any referrals to legal practice counsel. Then the focus area number two deals with payments made as a result of irregular procurement process followed by RAF. The SIU is currently conducting investigation into two 10 contracts which were awarded to certain service providers by way of a procurement process. And among these contracts, there are procurement irregularities which were flagged by the Auditor General of South Africa. Then in terms of the progress to date, we decided not to name the contract because the investigation is still ongoing and we're still engaging some of the service providers. As you can see that four of them, there are possibility of referring some of those contracts to special tribunal so that those contracts can be cancelled. The first one is a contract that is amounting to 742 million. The second one is a contract which is amounting to 1.8 million. And the third one is a 40 million contract. And the fourth one is 53 million contract. So all these contracts, the investigation is at an advanced stage where we are assessing the information that we must refer the evidence to special tribunal so that those contracts can be cancelled and we can recover the money that has been paid. Then in terms of focus area number three, we focus on payments made to service provider by RAF in terms of their act. Here, RAF pays claim from service providers who have rendered services to the victims of the motor vehicle accident. This claim include inter alia, ambulance claims, hospital claims, doctor's claims, and expert claims. Then in terms of the progress here, the SIU has gathered information and data in respect of such claims and in some instances appointed experts to assist with the claim related to over-servicing by hospitals or doctors. And here the investigation is ongoing. Even here there are some of the claim that are at an advanced stage where we are in the process of taking those claims to the special tribunal. And we have appointed the expert so that they can able to look at some of the claim that has been submitted so that we can quantify to see whether indeed some of these claims were rendered. Then focus area number three, it's invoices submitted to RAF, including bill of cost. The SIU investigation focuses on possible inflated invoices submitted by service provider, either by way of contract or the act. The investigation also focuses on possible collusion between RAF employee and the service providers, and we're also looking at the bill of cost submitted by attorneys. Then progress to date is that this in part focus of the investigation is ongoing. The team is collecting the data and all the relevant information that is needed so that we can able to advance the investigation to the finality. Then focus area number three, we are looking at fraudulent claims. We are looking at the fraudulent claims. The investigation cover all the provinces in the country, and also we're looking at foreign claims. The investigation cover inter alia the following, that is claims received in a foreign by foreigners and national that is relating to motor vehicle accident. And also we are looking at home modification across the country, and we are looking at repudiated claims. So the progress here also is that the investigation is currently ongoing. The SIU is currently mirror imaging the RAF claim system, and therefore the SIU will conduct a data analytics in order to identify the red flags for further investigation. And in terms of the observations, these are some of the observations that we have identified in relation to the investigation. Attorneys are approaching financial institutions for loans to pay back the amounts paid to them in duplicate payments. This one relates to the first focus area where there is a duplicate payment made to attorneys, meaning that the money which was paid to them in duplicate, they were not supposed to have used them. So what they do, they go around and look for loans so that they can pay back the money, and of which, in terms of the money that they received, they were supposed to have kept that money in a trust account and not to use it. But we found that some of them, they go around and make some loans so that they can pay back the money. And there's also influx of risks of execution that is during the time of our review. whereby attaching of the RAF bank account whilst the said claim is already lodged in the RAF payment system. Thus, payments will be made in terms of the rate of execution and RAF payments constituting duplicate payments. These duplicate payments will be made to the sheriff and attorneys. So I think some of the attorneys, they do it deliberately, or they know that the payments will be paid within 180 days, and as a result, they go this route. And also some of them that you have approached, they indicate that they some of resistance where they don't want to pay the money. They say RAF has other claims against them, so those claims must be settled against other claims that they have against RAF. And according to our investigation, is that they must pay back all the money that has been paid in terms of duplicate. Any other claims that have put against RAF will be paid or will follow different processes. Then the above observation also reveals a lack of or a delay in reconciling the RAF bank accounts against the claims paid under the normal payment processes in the rate payment. Although the investigation is ongoing, there is an indication that RAF, they have made duplicate payments to the other experts also, like the doctors and other service providers. So we are also looking at those type of duplicate payments made by RAF. And continuation of observation, RAF employee who are also key to the investigation are no longer in the employment of RAF. And RAF have three instances of ransomware attack that occur in December 2020, June 2021, and August 2021. Thus, some of the information relevant to the investigation was lost. And at this stage, the impact is minimal, but the SIU investigation is ongoing and the impact will be monitored. The SIU noted the high risk of litigation, particularly from the person of interest, as we know that this investigation is more towards the legal practice, the lawyers, and most of them are so litigious, and we are in observation of the action that they take, particularly when we approach them for the payments of the money that they need to pay back. Then in terms of the systemic recommendation, we suggest that periodic bank reconciliation in order to prevent and detect possible duplicate payments needs to be done by RAF. And prior to effecting payments, they need to do checks and balances on whether there has been any rate of execution on any claims that they need to pay. And they need to review their claim payment processes so that this duplicate payment is avoided. Then in terms of the risk, there's a possible destruction or loss of relevant documents. Here, the mitigation is that we always do the search and seizure, and we always seize the laptops and the computer so that we can retrieve whatever information that might have been destroyed. And there might be lack of cooperation from employees who are no longer in the employee of RAF. Here, we utilize the SIU powers so that we can subpoena them, they can give us the information that we require. And there might be inability to recover from service providers, that is the service providers who provided services to RAF, and here we'll conduct a lifestyle analysis, and also we'll try and freeze some of the available assets that the service provider might have so that we can able to recover the cost that we'll be recovering from them. So that's all from the investigation. The investigation is currently ongoing, and it involves quite a different type of scenarios, and it's so huge, and so far the progress is going well. Then I'll hand over to Advocate. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. That is the end of the status of the investigations. I think my colleague covered some of the aspects that I had. I think of importance really is these lawyers that sign, they're quick to sign the acknowledgement of debt. In many instances,
and I just say lawyers because in this instance we're dealing with lawyers, but anyone whom we approach with prejudices or having caused a loss to state institutions and they are quick to admit and sign acknowledgement of death, we make sure that that does not absolve them from any further civil litigation that we may seek to institute, criminal prosecution, or any other regulatory authority action. In this regard, the Legal Practice Council will refer these lawyers to the Legal Practice Council so that they are dealt with there in terms of their legislation and they are held to account, possibly even struck off the roll, because we do not want to have those kind of lawyers dealing with state institutions going forward. Thank you.
Right. Thank you very much, Advocate Mthivi and your team. Because the investigations are ongoing, let's come back later. But, Honorable Lee, let's wrap up with SIU and then Wolf and Minen will then be in your hands. We will go back to Ruff on that. Nazamba.
A quick one, sorry, Mr. Chairman. It applies to all the investigations, I suppose, to some extent, but I'm particularly interested in the 10 contracts and the 4 ready for referral. We don't need to know the details, but have we any idea when they were entered into those contracts? I mean, I'd like to know who was running the organization at that time. Yeah.
Yes, for you.
No, thank you, Honorable Lees. Sorry,
Van Lees.
That detail will ask the lead investigator to just give an indication of the timeline within which those contracts were entered into. But the approach we take, Honorable Lees, is that during the whole period of investigation, and that's why I said when I started, that part of the maladministration investigation would look at the failure of people. And the failure of people is people who are formally employed by RAF and those who are non-executives. So it would be the non-executives accounting authority at the time and those who were employed by RAF at the time. So just for clarity, perhaps the lead investigator could give an indication of when those contracts were entered into. Thank you.
Thank you very much, the Honorable Chair. The contracts that we are looking into, they are within our proclamation, and they are different kinds of dates, ranging from 2018, 2019, 2020. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Masego. That's the response, Honorable Liz. Thank you.
Honorable Mentor.
Chair, thank you very much. Advocate, I just want to check in terms of your time frames. When did you start with the investigation and when do you think you will finish? Because my fear is the people that will be resigning in the middle of this investigation and successfully claim their pensions. And a follow-up question to that is, should there be any of the people who are involved here, do we have a mechanism which for as long as they are under investigation, their pensions are not accessible? Thank you.
No, thank you, Honorable Mentor. So when we investigate an evidence point to employees, and that evidence implicates them. So usually what happens is that, and we've seen it as a scenario in various investigations, that when we approach those individuals or employees, part of what we see is that they resign, seeking, of course, to then get their pensions. So what we have implemented now as an approach, and we have seen that it works, is that we go to the special tribunal and freeze the pension so that the pension fund is restricted from paying. So then it becomes really very important that we speed up the investigation such that all those who have been pointed to, because there are findings already. For example, in the AODs, let's say, those who paid acknowledgement of debts, we need to trace back into the organization in terms of who was involved, you know, in the process, so that we make those findings as speedily as possible and then mitigate the risk of those employees who could then resign and cash in their pensions and really not be held to account. But I've also sort of instructed the team, and including the legal team of SIU, that anyone who would have contributed to the prejudice or loss of REF, whether still in employment or have left, when we go to special tribunals, we need to determine, as part of the respondents, the basis on which we should also cite those who have left. We can't let them off the hook, whether civil proceedings or criminal proceedings. We take the point, and we will really, when we go back and we'll review and see how really speedily, because of, you know, the circumstances that the investigation is conducted in, see the kind of speed that we can really infuse in the investigation. We started the investigation in 2021, so 21 has gone past. We are now in 21 and 22. We started in 22, sorry. 22, it was, the proclamation was in December 21, so we started 22. So the whole of 22 has passed. We're in 23, so we are at a stage now where we really need to ensure that this investigation is speeded up. All of those focus areas that need to be done will really just make sure that the timeline is such that it takes into account the speedy return of findings. But I just need to give Mr. Lkgetho just an indication in terms of the timeline within which we aim to conclude this investigation.
Thanks, Advocate. The end date projection according to the project plan is March 2024. Thank you.
No, thank you. Thank you, Honorable Mentor. So just to March 2024, maybe the projected date, as we go back and review, we might possibly be able to draw it back or draw it forward. So we really look at the urgency of the situation. Part of what we need to do is also ensure that it's resourced appropriately, because there's an indication of experts that are appointed or that need to be appointed. I will ensure that we'll engage the team when we go back with a view of ensuring that the objective is to, you know, see if we can, you know, pull forward the end date with a view of finalizing it as quickly as possible, assist the institution to deal with the outcomes. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Let's do this then. And we're going to go to Honorable Van Min, and thank you very much, Advocate Ntibi. I think we will leave the SIU investigation to run its course. I think we are well within an understanding space in terms of what it is that you are doing. And we will await that. Of course, we also take comfort in your interim reports as well as you go. So that does help, because some of these things need not wait for March 2024. They can be done in the intervening period. So I'll just
okay, sure. I'm sorry to...
No problem.
Apologies. I just wanted to pick up on that point. Yes. Now that we have passed a year, we need to now produce an interim report. And the team will probably be busy with that, so that we are able to say to the committee, to the president, to the institution, and to the ministry, of course, that this is where we are, these are the outcomes we have reached, and this is how they have been dealt with. And then the investigation could further proceed, hopefully
as we go back and review, and before, well before March 2024. Thanks.
Even better than what I was submitting. All right, Honorable Faminen, please just wrap up for us the issues around the change of accounting policy, the audit finalization, and the litigation, and then you can just clean that up for us, and then we will. So, Madam Chair, we're coming back to RAF. Honorable Faminen, in your hand.
Thank you very much. I can't say that I take comfort from the SIU reports. I'm very grateful for them, but they're not particularly comforting when one sees what's going on. I don't really know where to start with REF. I mean, it's to use another movie parallel, it's essentially Groundhog Day. I mean, we're sitting here 7 months later, nothing has happened, nothing has changed. It seems to be very much a circular argument here. I really have some questions about what is going on here. There have been numerous attempts to hold the board to account. We have seen the correspondence from the previous minister as well as the current minister. I'm glad to see that the minister certainly appears to be losing patience with what is going on. I think that it's really, really problematic. When I was an article clerk some over 20 years ago, at that point, one of the risks of the RAF was their litigiousness. And it's now got to the point where it just seems to be a complete refusal to cooperate and litigating just for the sake of litigating. So what I want to start with is in terms of where we were last year, when we first started discussing this particular issue. And the minister suggested, should we say, that the RAF, or recommended that the RAF, withdraw the matter and look for alternative dispute resolution. We've now sat here listening to all kinds of reasons why the RAF saw that as conditional, and various reasons have been given for that. They appear to have put a whole lot of preconditions in before they were withdrawn to get themselves amenable to alternative solutions. So what I really want to find out here is, in terms of the alternative dispute resolution, what has it actually done in a positive manner to move that forward, to try to resolve this? And I'm not necessarily asking for a list of the conditions they put into place, but I am concerned about why these conditions were put down. And in particular, it was brought up that the RAF sought a particular mediator. If we can unpack that, because it certainly isn't conducive to alternative dispute resolution to immediately bring in a condition that there has to be a particular mediator. So on what basis did the RAF think that was justified? Thank you.
For want of time, as soon as she's done, just answer the questions. She's sort of holding the fort at this part.
Thank you, Chairperson. The alternative dispute resolution mechanism that we proposed was mediation. However, we proposed a mediator, but it was not conditional that mediator be utilized. We're trying to fast-track the process so that we put in place to say, this is the mediator we propose, expecting that the AG would then either agree or propose an alternative mediator. But the ADR that we propose was mediation.
Now, as Rami Mento pointed out, the AG didn't have a dispute. This has come very much from the RAF, with the argument being that they want to be treated as a social services provider. At this point, I think, quite honestly, it's more of a lottery than a social service provider, because there really do appear to be incredibly big problems with actually paying people out. And I'm not, at this particular point, unpacking anything to do with issues like medical aids, the court case there, the appeal there, although that in and of itself, I think, Chair, is something we need to look at. What I'm trying to find out is, by the time we meet next month, it'll be 8 months since this process was entered into, and it still appears that nothing has actually moved forward. So you wanted the RAF proposed mediation, the RAF proposed a particular mediator. But surely that doesn't take 8 months to get to the point where now there's a meeting with the AG. So what I'm trying to determine here is, and I mean also looking at the letters that have come from the minister just purely during this month, other than that, has there been any movement forward in any way, or is it simply a case of sitting passively and waiting for something to happen from somebody else, emanating from a dispute that was created by the RAF? Chair, in terms of moving forward, as you indicated, I mean the committee holds a different view in the sense that there was no dispute. But why we propose ADR is because we understood that there's a dispute. So that's how we're moving forward, to say because there's a dispute, we're proposing ADR. We do not know what will happen in terms of the meeting with the AG. We've been asking for a meeting with the AG herself, and we've made ourselves available as a board. It is only at this point in time that we're now getting to have that meeting with the AG herself. So from the beginning, that's what we requested immediately after we had the meeting with the minister in October. And as I indicated, we took that decision on the 27th of October. On the 10th, we then had a meeting with officials of the AG, but not the AG herself, and we're only getting that meeting now. So I'm not sure how, you know, because in our view it was important for the board to meet with the AG herself, and it's only now that the AG has given us a date to meet with us.
One minute, just one second. I think let me clarify this position. When we are speaking about the AG not being in dispute, what we are saying is that the AG disputed nothing. They audited and arrived at an outcome. So the people disputing is RAF. I think that's the, it may seem like, it's a fine line in term, but the bottom line is, from where we are seated, is that this is not a mutual dispute, let me put it that way. The people disputing is RAF, disputing an AG outcome, because the audit was done, you see. I think that, I just thought I should clarify it after you and Honourable Mente have raised it.
So essentially RAF has been turned down in terms of the standards that RAF wants to apply. This has now been ongoing for a considerable amount of time. There have been enormous delays put in here. Why do you want to meet, why does the board specifically want to meet with the AG herself? Why is it not good enough to actually accept the AG's finding, number one? Number two, what happens if at that meeting there is no progress as far as RAF is concerned? And number three, at what point, and I'm also looking at the whole body of litigation that's coming out of RAF at the moment, and how you continually appeal, and when you lose, you know, appeals then go on to a higher body, including the Constitutional Court, I see one particular matter. How much will it take before RAF finally accepts, potentially, that they are incorrect? At what point does RAF then actually buckle down and do what is required of it in terms of audit?
Through you, I think in audit terms, there are always disputes about findings, and I think we, as part of the mandate letter, if you look at paragraph 60, I think, of the mandate letter, talks about disputes and how they need to be resolved. And there are different layers of dispute resolution. So it starts at the steering committee, it comes to myself, it goes to, I think, the business unit within the AG, it escalates, it actually goes to the audit committee themselves, they get involved. Then, of course, ultimately, it's usually, I mean, we have had disputes when I was working at the department as well, it will end up with the AG herself, just to get to find each other. And, of course, only after that dispute cannot be resolved, it's then referred to the OAG, and it's only after that AG that litigation is envisioned. So that is the process of escalation of dispute. In this case, there's a technical dispute. It started from there, and I think if you look at the presentations by the AG themselves when they went to the portfolio committee and when they came here for the first time, they did concede there existed dispute.
But what I'm asking now is the progress going forward. What would happen if you, if RAF and the AG don't find each other on the 16th? And to what extent will it then escalate this matter? Will RAF then return to litigation? What is perceived as the way forward? And at what point, if this continues, is there actually going to be, potentially, a concession from the RAF in terms of accounting standards?
So I think what is important is to find each other, and I think the ADR process is what we envisage. Because the fact that we don't agree with the AG does not mean that there can't be a mediation process. All we seek to do is present our case to an independent forum where it can be assessed and it should be resolved. Because the engagements, for instance, with the minister, was with the understanding that there exists a dispute. And I think in the discussions, the minister said, you need to engage everybody. The part that becomes also difficult is when our own regulator is not involved. So that's what we have been also asking for, that the regulator in the Prudential Authority must come. And one of the developments that has happened that may well have not been brought to the attention of this committee is the decision by the Public Sector Classifications Committee, which classifies us. If you look at the Institutional Sector Classifications Guide of the Reserve Bank of March 2017, it's clear that we are a Social Security Fund. And in December last year, there is a guide about the road accident fund classification that was issued by the same committee, which is the Public Sector Classifications Committee. And we are saying all those must come into the mix because it's important that the nature and state of the RAF be determined. And I think that for us becomes important as part of the whole thing of coming to either agreeing or disagreeing with the position of RAF or the AG as it may be.
So is there a potential that RAF would then return to the litigious position if this meeting isn't productive?
So it's not something that we would like to see. As the minister has instructed, we agreed we are going to go through alternative dispute resolution. So I would not want to preempt the outcome of the alternative dispute resolution because I think at that point, once we have got an independent mediator or an arbitrator, we should be able to be in a position to find each other and a determination can be made by that individual that we have both agreed to.
Moving on to the issue which was raised by the RAF board about costs, although quite honestly, I don't think cost is really the biggest of the issues that one has at this particular point. It was brought up that the cost is also a dispute, but as we have also heard, and as Scopo is very much of the view that this dispute has been solely caused by the RAF, what is the view as to the costs of this entire process, which has now lasted months and months and months?
I think the issue around cost share was an issue around usually where matters have already been to court and people agree to take the matters out of court to ADR process or anything like that or stop with the litigation. Usually there are discussions about whether one tenders costs or whether every party then pays for their own costs. So those are proposals in that regard, and it's how we see it. The reality is that we are here, and the dispute was there. All of us agreed to this dispute. If you look at the discussions between us and the AG, you would find that at all material times we sought to find a way in which we can resolve this matter. And I think the technical complexity of this matter made it difficult for both of us on either side to actually agree. And in that regard, of course, the dispute exists. The question is, on the issue that you want the court to clarify this dispute or resolve this dispute, there are always going to be costs. Even in terms of the ADR, there are costs associated with that. And unfortunately, it's the way in which we resolve disputes that result in that. Because the dispute, if it is not resolved between the two organizations, it is going to always end up if some external parties included, whether it be a mediator, an arbitrator, or that, there would be costs associated with that. So usually there's agreement and so in terms of who then would fit those costs.
Well, I mean, I would point out that in terms of the Lagodi judgment, which was very clear, I mean, there's now appeals being served, so essentially how long is a piece of string? My concern is that the RAF has got to the point now where virtually every situation it has, it ends up in very, very costly litigation. And I would be very, very interested to see what the actual costs are in the last financial year and previous financial years that is being spent on litigation, that's being spent on admin versus actual processing of claims and performing the role that the RAF is there to actually perform. Chair, if I can ask at some point, we can really have a look at that. I think that's very important, that we actually see what the percentage spend is, because at this point I'm very concerned that the majority of the RAF time and finance seems to be going into litigation like this. The appeal that is now happening in terms of the Lagodi judgment, how is that being funded? Is that being funded by the RAF?
Yes, sir. So far as this is concerned, to the extent that it involves the RAF, yes, it's funded through the RAF. It is funded through the RAF, and it's specifically because Section 15 of the RAF is clear about personal costs and how they should come towards. There's a protection in terms of Section 15, which we believe that has been done away with by this judgment, and therefore, for us, it's something that the RAF gets involved in.
So the RAF is funding the appeal, even when it applies to the board members and the chair at this particular point?
Yes, so far as Section 15 is concerned. That couple of things, Chair. There is a cover that comes from the insurance aspect of decisions that are taken, that there is an insurance that does that. But the insurance only comes at the end when it triggers that event. So for now, it's funded by the RAF, but if then at the end the outcome is such that it must be paid, then the insurance cover will cover that. Thanks.
Chair, I just wanted to divert slightly, but I do believe it is relevant, particularly to this discussion. In terms of the matter with discovery and the issue of medical aid, I see there that the SCA refused leave to appeal and that the RAF is now appealing to the Constitutional Court for leave to appeal. I really do believe that this illustrates the extreme litigiousness of the RAF in this regard, and that I think this permeates the entire organization. Again, there, I'm not going to ask the details of the appeal, but is presumably the RAF is also continuing to fund that, although the SCA has already refused that leave to appeal.
I think let's start with the part that talks about litigation costs, because I think we'll have a missed opportunity if we do not tell you what the new model has done in actually reducing litigation costs. We are sitting at more than 70% reduction in litigation costs since we started. The litigation costs, so the structure of the RAF model as it is based on delict. In that way, avoiding litigation is just not possible in the claims process, but that's what we've been trying to do. When we arrived, the cost of litigation at the RAF were 10.6 billion. and in the money that we were collecting was 43 billion. And it tells you that more than 25% was actually going to lawyers. The new model is structured in such a way that more money has been paid. 30% since we started, we have taken away money from litigation costs actually into the claimants. So that would be ready to deal with. So the context is that the way it is. And now the issue here is you start, when you reduce the claims administration costs, you need to, because remember the pot is finite, so you are collecting this fuel levy, which has not been increased for the past 3 years. If indeed it happened in the previous model, RAF would have just simply went to the National Treasury as for a bailout, because the reality is that much more money that is collected out of each and every rent, at least let's just say 40 cents that we're seeing directly, it was going to administrative costs. In our new model, we turned that. We are taking away that 40 cents. We are taking some of that money back to the claimant where it actually belongs, which is this battle about our panel of attorneys, plaintiff attorneys, and that. So let me, then that gives you the part. So when we looked at the costs, one of the other costs that were there were the actuarial costs. We're paying actually 10,000 per calculation. No one does that in this industry. You go to Old Mutual, probably it costs much more less than that. That's what we have done. We have intervened in that regard. On the issue of medical aid, this is our contention. So where you have the medical aid being responsible for prescribed minimum benefits, which in terms of regulation aid, they must pay in full. They are also responsible for paying emergency medical conditions in full in terms of regulation aid. Now, what they've been doing is they have been paying that money as a statutory obligation on their side. And what they then do, they send their own members, get lawyers for them to claim that money from RAF. And we are saying it can't be correct that the medical aid, with its statutory obligations, meets those statutory obligations and think they've got reimbursive rights to claim from a social security fund. It can't be correct. And that's the contention there. Because if they were direct, they would have just simply themselves came to us and said, give us that money, we've already paid it. They don't do it like that. They send a law firm, they ask their members and say, go and claim, and once you've claimed, give us this money. I mean, it's like someone saying, well, over the period, literally, you've paid your taxes, you are now 60, you have got a retirement annuity with me, I will pay you that, please go to SASSA and claim the 2,000 rand back. We said it doesn't work like that. This is a social benefit fund, and our view is that the principle of subrogation does not exist in a social service. That's the debate. So we think that constitutionally it's something that we must take the constitutional court, they must look at it and agree or disagree with us. And that's why we are taking it all the way. It's not because we just want to litigate for the sake of it. We think there is a principle that if left unchallenged will create a big problem for the state. That's how we see it.
Honorable Fanning, before you proceed, I hear the numbers that have been given, but in the absence of a submission to Parliament of the audit report and the annual report, we must note those, but we can't take them as, because seated here, the REF is still in a dispute. So whilst I don't want those figures taken as the alpha and omega of the situation until such time that they've been submitted. So there has to be, there's a qualification that we must place on them, because the question becomes the new model that the CEO speaks about. To what extent is that new model linked to the changes in the accounting standard and so on? So we want to get the full picture before we can take that as a conclusive statement. I just wanted to draw attention to that. Sorry.
Yes, agreed, Chair. We will see it in our 2020-2021. You will see it in the one of 2021-22. the issue around the accounting policy does not affect that part. This is in relation to a long-term liability accounting, which is why we are saying the differences between us and the AG are actually specific to the long-term accounting for the liability. Thanks, Chair.
I think, Chair, being able to actually go through those documents is going to be very relevant going forward. At this point, I think my call is catching up with me, if I can hand back to you, Chair. Thanks.
Thank you very much. I know we're trying to hear kicking and screaming in a good way. All right, colleagues, let's just tie down on this. I just have very quick things I want to add. Who is this mediator that you proposed? Did they come from a pool of people? Or?
Yes, it came from a pool of people.
So who was it?
We'll check for you and revert now. It's an SC, I remember, from one of those.
Now, then you speak about so this mediation, right? Because I want to get this well. And Honorable Van Meenen, in their opening questions, put it, I thought we'd get an answer. What I want to gauge, colleagues, is this. Are you going to the mediation with a view to assert the accounting standard which is in dispute? Are you still going there to say you are right? That's what I want to understand.
Yes.
Because, like I'm saying, ASB, National Treasury, Ministry, AG, us here, and you are the only ones who are holding on to this accounting standard. So you're going there to achieve what?
Chair, remember the at the NAM of the discussion about the accounting policy is the nature and form of the RAF. Whether it's an insurance.
No, Mr. Lusoli, respectfully, that's elementary. We understand. What I'm trying to get to from you is, are you going there to say that the approach you have taken, whatever the nuances is right and that the AG is wrong? Is that it? You are still going there to assert and affirm this accounting standard, to convince the AG, we are right, this is it. That's what I want to gauge. What is your case proposition?
Our case proposition is that AG, we are a social security fund. And their proposition, of course, will say you are an insurer.
So we are back to September 2022.
Chair, the aim is to arrive at, the aim is to convince each other about the nature of what we are.
No, you are going there to convince the AG that your accounting standard is right and that the AG is wrong.
Chair,
I think let's take away the fluff.
No,
and be just blunt.
No, the bluntness of it, Chair, would mean that we don't go to the NAM of what the issue is. Because you see, if we agree that on the nature of what RAF is, then the rest becomes secondary. Because then you must firstly agree.
Yeah.
If I'm saying today you are a sole proprietor, someone says you are a company, at some point we must then agree what you are before we can apply any accounting
standard. Is it
standard?
The position of REF that the accounting standard which it currently employs should stand?
Yes, because we believe that we are
right.
A social
So we are back in September 2022. Despite your shareholder writing to the chairperson to the contrary of that. So then, why are we wasting our time with all these gymnastics?
Chair, to be fair, our shareholder does not agree with us that there are a social security fund.
No.
The shareholder does not say that.
I know exactly what the shareholder does because I've gone through what the shareholder has said to you in March 2023. I'm very clear about that.
We agree that we...
And I want to, in fact, to build on that. you go on to the PESS guidelines of December 2021, are those retrospective, these guidelines you speak about? Because you make a lot of song and dance about how the ASB is not binding, but the PSCC, as a technical committee, their classifications are not binding either. So, I mean, you came here in September and said, no, what the ASB says is not binding. PSCC is not binding either. And you speak about the guidelines coming out in December 2022, right?
Yeah,
are those retrospective?
No, sir, the international, sorry, the institutional sector classification guide of the Reserve Bank classifies us as a social security. The 2017 one, section 3.5 thereof, says as at March 2016. So what we get in December is a reaffirmation of RAF as a social security fund. It's not a classification as per se. It is saying it is what we are. I mean, even in terms of the AG itself is classified as a constitutional institution in the very same classification. So APSA is classified as a bank, everyone else is classified in terms of the classification. So the reality is that that classification guide binds, because if it binds even at the IMF level, it must bind on all of us. Yeah. Thanks.
Even we're getting deeply into the debate about the merits of this, and may I suggest that we. Can I make a proposal, Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, all right. Let's, Honourable Sonia had just handed out. Can I let him conclude versus on the floor? Conclude, Honourable George, on the floor. No, go on. And then Sonia will come in.
Mr. Chairman, it seems to me that both the board and the executive of the RAF have lost the confidence of everyone that they do business with, really. And so may I suggest that the solution to this intractable problem, which goes on and on and on, and seems to me it will land up back in the Constitutional Court, because the current board and executive seem unwilling to accept the position of the AG and other institutions, that perhaps the answer to this, Mr. Chairman, is for the executive and the board to resign and accept that they can't move this issue forward and they can't move the RAF forward, and then we can get on with the real business of what the RAF should be doing.
Right, Honourable Sonia.
No, Chair. I've been sitting here with a sort of frustration relating to the fact that we can't go on arguing on the same matter which drive us to area of merits which should move from the fact that the Auditor General does not prescribe the standard, the AG audits on the basis of the prescribed standard, and the Accountant General was here in front of us, Treasury, they exposed to us a list of choices that ought to be made around standards of any institution which receives support in terms of fiscus. And this is one of those institutions. They can't come to us and say, we want to be audited this way, and falter in an environment where they handle substantively very emotive matters that relate to claims of individuals who ought to find themselves covered in a particular instance. So the Auditor General would follow that trend which looks into matters that relate to any institution that exists at that level. So that's why the AG has finalized the audit of 21-22. Those are the basis of the finalization of that audit. And anything that gets into any discussion from now on would have been on the current audit, which itself can't go out on the prescribed standard, unfortunately. Otherwise, we'll have no country. We'll have no laws. The formulation of rules, they rely on a service provider that they procure, and that service provider give them advice, and they stand firm on the basis of advice of that service provider. And to us, we must accept the fact that the public path must be handled in any other way in terms of the defiance of any institution which is somewhat out there. So as this committee, I think, Honourable, this is getting into that point. So, with restraint, I would say that the board, well, the executive authority, its consideration, with my full understanding, that even the life of this board has reached its own existence. They were supposed to be off by December last year. And they are living in borrowed time, in terms of their own life. And if they continue doing this within that time, maybe the ministry should consider evaluating their own existence and look into a better way of ensuring that the country does not lose out on an asset which is in the hands of a delinquent operation which would lead into it's an institution which is really carelessly dealing with matters that matter for our society. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Mente, and then we will bring this to an end. DM, just stand by. I've noted your hand.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chairperson, let me start by addressing the issue of the sort of defense made by the official accounting for APORAF in terms of the Section 15 that sort of protects their action of appealing. It's very clear that anything that is done in good faith. But in this case, I'm going to simply say it's not done in good faith, it's done in arrogance. Because let's just say the first instance of going to court was done in good faith. But after all the remedies and after all the interventions, the minister intervening, parliament intervening, AG intervening, and the other committees of parliament, transport and SCOBA, you still continue to exercise and utilize the mechanism that which everyone is calling you out of order for. That's no longer in good faith. That's in a sense what the chairperson is saying. You continue to do what I'm right, whoever says I'm wrong, they are wrong. I'm right, and whatever happens, I'm still right. So there's nothing in good faith, CEO, when you continue to utilize the purse of the state in defense of what you believe is right when every other person is telling you is wrong. But not only because of face value facts, but is telling you based on what's governing this country. IMF doesn't govern our country. IMF doesn't govern our country. They write whatever papers they write and guide and whatever, but we've got our own laws. And the laws of this country must always prevail and be respected. So we cannot then utilize the RAF Act to protect and defend arrogance. That cannot be correct. Then number two, Chairperson, this issue of the accounting standard and the classification of RAF, I really don't think it's something to write home about. Because at the end of the day, there are processes within this parliament and within each and every institution. If you want to be classified somehow, there are processes to follow in order to reach your goal of classifying RAF the way you think currently it is formed. There's no problem with that. But you cannot then try to force everyone else to believe you without you following that particular process. There's a process in which the minister and the, at the executive level, they can introduce a law, they can amend a law, they can do everything. You've got that opportunity at your disposal. But you are following a wrong, long route, arrogantly so. So can you go and do what you have to do? But Minister, last one is that DM, you are the one who's here. And you know what I like, Chairperson, is that the last meeting the DM attended, the last meeting where we're dealing with this, the DM attended, the current minister, which was a DM on the day, is the one who actually took the mandate of parliament to the minister. So, with all due respect, DM, in the minister, I think you're failing us. We don't have a board in RAF. If ever we're going to be held at ransom on the basis of a belief and not on the basis of the law, then we are in a banana republic. And please don't fail us. Do what is right. Go dissolve the board. Go put your measures in place. And please support and defend the people of South Africa. Because right now, we are going to just sit there and incur the cost of litigation throughout due to the fact that there is no one who is carrying an interest of what should be protected in terms of the law, but what must be protected in terms of what I believe. I chair the board, and therefore I believe like that, and no one can tell me. That's not how we operate. Thank you, Chair.
All right. I'm reminded of a song by Bill Medley and Gladys Knight, Living on Borrowed Time. That is exactly where the RAF is. Because the bottom line is that nothing, absolutely nothing, zilch, zero, nada, luto, has changed from September 22 to date. In fact, what we have is a vanity legal process of epic proportions. It's a legal expedition anchored in recalcitrance, anchored in arrogance, and I reiterate the point that I made, that everybody else is wrong and that you are right. You are an island of correctness. Everybody else is wrong. It has become a fishing expedition at the expense of the taxpayer. I mean, how do we even continue with this hearing? It's not submitted to Parliament. Because for you, Parliament is an irritation. Accountability is an irritation. Oversight is an irritation. You have deliberately chosen to define yourselves outside the governance framework of this country, constitutional and otherwise. And you are digging in your heels because because your third assumption is that there will be no follow-up and follow-through to the things that Parliament and everybody else directs you to do. That's your problem. We saw it the last time and we've seen it today. And I want to assure you, we hold the AG's assurance as the alpha and omega. Of course, we're not saying that they are not susceptible to mistakes. Of course they are. But in this case, we are with the AG. We have got a disclaimed audit outcome. That's the bottom line. The change of accounting standards was accounting gymnastics in order to clean your books. That's what it was. To deal with the liability. Then there's a lot of song and dance in the public that you fix the problem with a stroke of a pen. Yet the material issues which continue to characterize RAF insofar as its governance shortcomings persist. And so you insist on this outlook of mediation because you are going there to literally wag your finger at the AG. That's what you're going to do. And as Lutonin, we are the ones who are in the loop. I have never seen a board conducting itself in this way of a public entity. I've never. It reminds us of those days of capture where boards were a runaway train doing anything, anyhow, anytime, how they like, with an I don't care attitude. That's what it is. We're not happy, DM. That much I can assure you. So, it's our outlook that the board is not fit for purpose. And the minister, in exercising her rights in terms of the act, please advise her. Colleagues, I'm proposing that she submit to us a report as to why the board, of course, is not appointed as it should be in the manner that it should, and the roadmap towards appointing the board. In the interim, we want, if this board is to remain in place in the trajectory of that period, to explain to us why these individuals should be in office, and a full-scale assessment of their own competence or otherwise. This disdain towards public funds is exactly why this country finds itself in trouble. Our patience as a public is being tested at the fact that people continue to conduct their business in the lagers of the protection of public funds to do anything anyhow, because any legal action is not footed, the bill is not footed by them but by the public. So we sit here every time and we have to be subjected to this painful exercise of arrogance. When the things are very simple, at every turn, everybody is telling you, this is wrong, go and change it. You know, if you can't be advisable as a person, then that's also a problem. It's not leadership. One of the weaknesses of leadership is the inability to be led, to be advised, to be guided. But the greatest hallmark of leadership is the ability to accept when you are wrong. And we would have long been past this period if RAF had accepted that there was an error at the very least, right? It was a deliberate decision, but take it as an error. We should not have done this. Change and go back so we can deal with the issues as they are. But no. We must abuse all of us. But the victim here is the taxpayer. what I'm saying to you, DM, is that we've got no confidence in the board, we've got no confidence in this process, that it is being done in good faith. That's the issue. So I don't think there's any, Honorable Bukas, can we suspend your until the submission is done so that you can then go to irregular and all those things and deal with the audit report when it comes through. And then we're placing it in the Minister's Court. Decisive leadership and decisions on this matter so that we can move on with RAF and see where we go with this. I really noted the mediator?
The name of the mediator is Philip Ginsberg, SC.
Thank you, Philip Ginsberg, SC, just for the record. Right, Honorable Lee Lostone.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a request, we're going to get the documents that have been requested and annual report and so on. May I ask for a record of the default judgments against the RAF? We've heard about how this new system is changing things, or has changed things in terms of the law, legal action and so on. So I'd like a report from the RAF and on all the default judgments since the new chief executive took over there, and that should, I hope, show a decline in that sort of action. But we'll see when we get it. I don't need any comment from anyone right now. So a list of all default judgments against the RAF since the CEO was appointed.
Honourable Van Minen had made issue of the legal spend. Can that be attached to that? And there's a deadline by the Minister for submission of what is due to Parliament, being the 28th of April. Can then that be also submitted to us then with all those? If there's any other documentation and things that we require, we will send it through. In writing so that it's actually concluded. AG, what we'll do is we will be in touch as well to get your assessment of things in terms of how far they are without interfering with your audit, just to get a sense of where are things. DM, ultimately this thing has to end. It can't be a revolving door like this. Can't. Yeah. You know, and I'm going to him now. But it can't be a revolving door like this. DM, over to you. I'm sorry that you made an appearance.
It's okay, Chair. I could see the intimidation of Honorable Somnyo that he was hoping you don't give me an opportunity.
I don't know about you. Well, I can see
thank you, Honorable Lee. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honorable Members. Well, it was very excruciating, you know, to sit through this. If it were according to me, I wanted to sneak a note to you, Chair, and say, don't you want to suspend? So that you can give us a chance. Certainly, number one, the door is not going to be revolving, that we can give you assurance. And if you look at the letters that the minister has written to the chairperson there, that is a clear indication. That's the first thing I want to assure the committee on. Now, I want to have the benefits of doubt that says maybe RAF is correct. Maybe RAF is correct. But I think, as the Chair was summarizing, maybe the approach and everything is what that brings this bit of discomfort. I don't want to totally say they are wrong in their approach, but I think the timing and the approach
is what for us in the ministry is an issue. And if you look at what the ASB says in the explanatory affidavit to the court, that in September 2022, they said they what militates against the relief claimed by RAF, one is that it would unduly prevent the AG from performing her statutory obligations, and that there are no weighty or exceptional circumstances justifying such reference. That's why I'm reading this, just to amplify our position that whatever is due to Parliament and to the institutions of oversight has to be submitted. We are not flinching on that. The deadline given by the minister and the last clause of that letter, if you read it, honorable colleagues, is that she says if it fails to happen, that we will, she will exercise her rights as a shareholder. So that is very clear that we have given time to the Road Accident Fund to submit everything due to Parliament. The letter by Minister Mbalula did not create conditions. Unfortunately, it seems like these two processes have become conditioned to another one. It was very explicit: withdraw from court. You can then explore other alternative mechanisms with all other institutions of state, which therefore says if tomorrow an issue arises with SARS, as an example, before you go to court, explore these particular things. But I think the conditionality thereof, posture by the Road Accident Fund, is regrettable. Our view is that the case must be withdrawn unconditionally. Any other thing that RAF, hence I said at the beginning, maybe they are right. I don't want to argue that. Then you can pursue whatever needs to be pursued. I think it is good. It might assist in terms of going forward. Now, the other issue that the ASB raises in their affidavit is saying if this the argument by RAF were to be entertained, it is going to delay the execution of her functions at the AG and not by finally interfering with the AG duties, and that therefore the principle regarding the separation of powers might permissibly be breached. Public interest is against such interference. They further say these all statutory instruments referred to above, including the Constitution, demand swift, accurate, and importantly, transparent reporting of financial affairs of public entities. This requirement of transparency is even more acute in the current state of concern regarding the governance of public entities in South Africa. So I'm saying, on the strength of that, Chair and honorable members, as a department, we are very resolute and clear in this matter. We take note of the things that the committee is resolving on, that the minister must submit to yourselves, and I'm sure we will do exactly that. So the issue of ceasing litigation is our position. If it's not clearer, we will further clear it between ourselves and the RAF, which we will meet very soon at the request of the minister. We have said to the RAF, which we will say again outside this meeting when we meet them, that the RAF must fully cooperate with the AGSA and whoever in submitting what is due to Parliament. And we have already spoken about what the previous minister's instruction, I don't want to say it was advice, because it then loosens it. So the Chair has already alluded to the couple of letters that the minister has written. And of course, we do take counsel from the committee of the minister having to look at the suitability, I think that's the words that were used, of the board. And so we have had, as the ministry, and as we said, I'm just re-amplifying what I started with, that this will not be a revolving door. We will make sure that it comes to an end. Chairperson, thank you so much.
Thank you very much, DM. Can we get the report on the board-related matters in 30 days, please? Roadmap, the whole nine yards, so that there's clarity on this matter. Babumtivi, all I want to say is the investigation matter that you raised, is to say perpetual litigation on one hand, and disclaimers, as we have seen with the NSF as they were here yesterday, which led us to direct that a forensic investigation be done. Perpetual litigation and disclaimers create a conducive and enabling environment for corruption and their distraction. And so we need to pull the RAF out of that so that there's clarity and transparency in its business and success. Therefore, there's urgency in the investigation than any other investigation being speedily concluded. Colleagues, right, let me take this opportunity first before I make these announcements. Deputy Minister, thank you very much, DG, and the departmental officials, Chairperson of the Board of REF and the board members and CEO and executives, thank you very much. AG, National Treasury, thank you very much. Advocate MTV and your team, thank you very much. Colleagues, tomorrow we are in Philippi to the central line. We are making the necessary arrangements to ensure safety as a follow-up to the issues we have raised. Sistembi and Lungi and Bupen will communicate details of travel later on today, but tomorrow we are with Prasa officials, we are going to see the central line that was reopened, so those details will follow. And then the Derita matter, once we've received documentation, we will send them through to you, and we will dispatch a time guideline in terms of how that meeting will be handled next week. So that is that. So there's no meeting on Tuesday next week. We are meeting Wednesday at 9 o'clock with Mr. Derita at S12A in the meeting that we had on the matters related to ESCOM. And then the final announcement, I know it's 5 to 12. Lunch will be served from about 12:15 in the Marx Building restaurant. You are all invited to lunch. On that note, the meeting stands adjourned. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.